Good morning. It's 8:06. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Parker Malatesta, filling in for Roger Goldman on this Friday, October 4th. It's currently 35 degrees in Park City, just around the same over in the Heber Valley. Temperatures set to rise again today, looking at highs in the 80s, and sunny conditions will continue through the weekend. Coming up, we will have Wasatch Community Foundation Business Planning Chair Jackie Misiak. She'll detail the upcoming Masquerade Ball fundraiser. Then UDOT Region 2 spokesperson Kyler Sharp will have details on projects across Summit County and when they might end. Then Jeff Whiteley with the Excellence Concert Series will discuss the upcoming free show with David Park tomorrow. Getting into some news now, the Yellow Lake Fire in eastern Wasatch County is now 22% contained as firefighters make progress battling the blaze. The fire, which started on Saturday, has burned just over 2,500 acres. The Forest Service says crews have created a fire line along the gas pipeline corridor, and structure protection is nearly complete at the YMCA camp in the Mill Hollow area. Fire officials say no structures or recreation property have been damaged. Highway 35 will remain closed until fire activity decreases and the road can be cleared of debris. Officials say heavy fuels like timber retain heat for long periods of time, and crews are monitoring fire lines to make sure no heat sources reignite. About 390 personnel are working this fire in the Uinta Wasatch Cache National Forest. In other news, the Heber City Council has delayed a decision about the future of short-term rentals. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports on the proposed limits from late-night hot tub bans to guest limits under penalty of criminal charges.
If approved, the new short-term rental policy would mean significant restrictions for rental hosts and their guests in Heber. Most noteworthy are proposed limits on the number of people and cars allowed at short-term rentals. The policy would cap the number of guests at 16, whether they're sleeping at the home or visiting. And it would set a limit of 3 vehicles, either in the driveway or on the street. The draft also includes what would amount to a curfew after 9 p.m. on weeknights and 10 p.m. on weekends. Guests would not be allowed to drink, smoke, or vape anywhere their neighbors could see. They would be forbidden from playing music or making excessive noise that could be heard outside the rental home. They wouldn't be allowed to use outdoor hot tubs or pools at night. And groups of more than 3 on patios or in backyards would be prohibited. There would also be harsher penalties for property owners whose guests don't abide by the rules. The first violation is an infraction, and any rule violations after the first problem would be punishable with misdemeanor charges and fines. The proposal comes after some council members argued Heber's rental properties need clearer rules and more stringent enforcement. They've received complaints from neighbors about parties, and Councilmember Scott Phillips has said he's worried short-term rentals hurt the supply of affordable housing. At the city council meeting Tuesday, numerous property managers who came to the meeting said they think the proposed changes go too far. Jeff Harris, who manages rental properties in downtown Heber, says the consequences for poorly behaved guests are unnecessarily punitive.
It's terrifying to me that a second violation results in a criminal charge and potentially suspending my business, when the bar of submitting a complaint that could result in a violation is someone saying it was too loud. What other business in town is held to that same kind of standard?
He says guest ratings help regulate rental quality without the city needing to get involved. Another rental property owner, Dan Maurer, agrees. He says it would make more sense for the city to tell neighbors to complain directly to rental companies.
Airbnb has zero tolerance for party homes. There's no 3 strikes, you're out. There's no nothing. Same with VRBO. And so you would be more effective in giving out the name and phone number of the people that monitor that at those platforms than you would with any rule or regulation or penalty, because nightly rentals completely and wholly depend on that star rating.
But some locals, like Cindy Delano, say rules about rentals are needed. She says she'd like to see the city council approve the proposed changes.
These codes will preserve the integrity of family neighborhoods and prevent neighborhoods from becoming party house neighborhoods on Airbnb.
Members of the city council say they feel conflicted about the policy changes the city attorney suggested. Councilmember Yvonne Barney says the occupancy limit doesn't necessarily make sense for the community.
There are families that have 8 kids, and then you include grandkids on that and great grandkids on that, and they're coming in for a family reunion. That's a big group. I don't want to regulate those families.
At the same time, she says she takes neighbors' concerns seriously. And Councilmember Mike Johnston says he thinks the council should spend more time discussing the policy to take everyone's feedback into account.
I'm willing to keep this ordinance and massage it and make it good and enforceable, but I'm also willing to listen to other people that may want to bring family reunions to Heber Valley, but they belong in a certain place, in a certain neighborhood, a certain area, because they're more commercial.
Any changes to the short-term rental policy would first be temporary with a 180-day limit. Permanent changes would go through a longer approval process. The City Council plans to discuss the rental policy again at its meeting October 15th. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
On the phone with me now, I've got Wasatch Community Foundation Business Planning Chair Jackie Misiak. How's it going this morning, Jackie?
Good morning. Doing well. Beautiful sunny day here.
Yes, it's been lovely. You know, I know there's an upcoming event we want to discuss, but I thought, you know, we'd just begin with, you know, can you kind of remind our listeners just what the Wasatch Community Foundation is all about?
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Yeah, we are a non-profit organization that has been serving our valley for 24 years. Our focus is improving the wellness of the people who live in our community. And we do that in five different areas, and we call those our pillars. And it focuses on human services, health services, education, arts, and recreation. And across all of those, it kind of gives a nice rounded perspective of all the different kinds of activities and needs we might see in our valley. So this includes everything from food insecurities and helping with that, all the way to helping ensure that our youth can participate in organized sports in a way that provides the self-confidence and value that those kind of activities can provide. So just a little bit about how we work.
Mm-hmm.
We work in partnership and collaboration with organizations that already serve our valley. So, for example, and our focus is how do we identify gaps and how do we, as Wasatch Community Foundation, help fill those gaps with partnership with these organizations. So a good example, just for perspective, our food banks. Our human services pillar partners closely with our food banks, identified a challenge. So you can imagine they get a lot of donated food around the holidays. But what about August and July? There was a gap in the flow of food, yet there's no gap in the need. So Wasatch Community Foundation human services pillar helped develop a program to leverage and coordinate the neighborhoods in our community to take turns donating food, thereby helping to balance out that fluctuation and making sure that our food banks don't go empty certain times of the year. So just we do a lot of collaboration, and we're focused on gaps that are needed to be filled so that everybody can live well here in our valley.
Yeah, and I understand you guys have been kind of going through a lot of growth recently.
Yeah. So over this last year in particular, we've seen a significant increase in need, gaps, that really is driving us to really kind of look at how do we continue to provide as our community grows. There are so many more needs that are expanding. So we're actually having our very first ever fundraiser. It's going to be a dinner, and it's October 10th. It's next Thursday. And it's going to be at the Homestead. And we're looking to increase our fundraising and so that we can meet the needs that we're expecting to have next year. Without increasing our donations, we will not be able to fulfill and help with the needs that are going to be coming, that we're expecting to come through the door next year. So we're very excited. We're also highlighting eight of our programs in that fundraiser, And it's not just for raising money. We also want to kind of use this as an opportunity for the attendees to get a better understanding of the breadth and depth of the work that we do across our valley.
Yeah, I understand. That's a masquerade party, so will masks be required?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, we wanted to have it be a little bit fun, a little bit celebratory. Mm-hmm. We'll have some masks there. We'll have some party beads. It's really about coming together as a community. No, masks will not be required. We do ask people to dress up, to have a good time, and enjoy a good meal, and understand a little bit more about our community. And because we're growing, there's also a lot of people in our community who are moving in, who would love to get connected, understand a little bit more about what's going on. And our hope is that people reach out, come to our website, get more engaged, understand a little bit more, and participate.
Yeah, and I think I saw entry cost, was it $150?
Correct. And gratefully, we are able to donate all of those funds if you buy a ticket directly to our programs.
Yeah, and then I also saw you all are seeking sponsors for that event too.
Yeah, actually, we've gotten a bunch of great sponsors for our event. So we have Jim and Carolyn Ritchie, who are our dinner sponsors. We have supporting sponsors in the Orthopedic Partners, Jeff and Kim Danley, as well as Scott Phillips. They have helped provide sponsorships to support the cost of the event so that everything that people donate beyond that will go directly to our programs. We also have a variety of people and organizations who are going to be matching sponsors. So as people donate to some of these programs that are a fundraiser, they will match those, which is an awesome impact.
Yeah, and just for the event in general, is there a fundraising goal you all are hoping to hit?
Yeah, we have a goal of $150,000 across 8 programs. But to be honest, our costs are going to be greater than that. So we're also looking for our normal donations beyond the fundraiser.
Yeah, and so I wanted to get a bit into the projects you all are working on. You know, what can you tell me about what the current project list looks like?
Yeah, sure. I'll do just a couple of them. We have 8 that we're highlighting for this fundraiser. One of them is the Children's Health Clinic. And that is, we run that every September in partnership with the health department. And it provides healthy kids exams for our youth who are uninsured in our valley. And the health department has identified that Wasatch County in particular has more of a need for this than the average Utah area. And what's awesome is the coordination and partnership with dentists and doctors and lots of professional providers. They come together all in one place so that these kids can get hearing checked, they get a dental checkup, they get a medical exam. In some cases, they'll get some mental health assessments. But the key thing is the follow-up. So in this, you identify, you know, kids who have impacted molars, kids that need a little extra help for anxiety, or kids that need maybe even, you know, we've seen that where they need a heart exam. That follow-up work that's important to actually change their lives is what Wasatch Community Foundation usually provides the funding to support those follow-up activities, whether it's a root canal, et cetera, and we work real closely with the dentists and doctors in our community who donate their time, but in some cases it's more extensive than that. So that's one example.
Yeah, and, you know, I wanted to go back what you said earlier just about seeing the just broader increase in need in Wasatch County and just being on the front lines? I mean, are there any variables you see driving that? I mean, is it just population growth?
Well, I can't specifically speak to what's driving that. I suspect it's population, but in some cases we see some of our partners and some of our organizations who provide services, they'll be fine for 1 year, but maybe the next year they see an influx of people who have a need. So for example, our youth recreation program, another one we're highlighting in our fundraiser, you know, there are, for example, we partner with Wasatch High School, and they saw an influx of kids, high school kids, who really wanted to participate in the mountain biking team. But not everybody can afford all the equipment. As you know, it's very expensive sometimes to mm-hmm. have all the right equipment to participate.
Yeah.
And we provided the funding to ensure that more of those kids could participate. And across the board, there's been a lot more people, organizations asking for help to ensure that kids in their area can participate. And we know that, you know, recreation, organized sports can really benefit young people in terms of giving them a sense of community, giving them self-esteem that sometimes is a little hard to get just from a school program. It gives them other avenues to kind of develop and become who they need to be.
Yeah. Any other specific projects you wanted to hit on?
Perhaps I'll just highlight one of our other programs that we're going to focus on, and it's really around human services. And this covers actually multiple different activities, and it is human services program. And that really focuses on food, meaning food insecurity, housing, and really there's been a huge focus from our human services pillar on self-reliance. So how do we provide skill sets, background, and capabilities in our valley so that people don't always have to rely on the food bank, and then they can be self-sufficient. There's been lots of different activities that have expanded here in our valley, including the Circles program, which helps individuals expand their skill sets and background on managing their own finances, which can drastically change someone's trajectory in terms of being self-sufficient. So we are highlighting the Human Services Pillar program as one of our key programs for our fundraiser.
Yeah. So where can people go online to learn more about the foundation and the event next weekend?
Yeah, awesome. So you can go to ourwcf.org, and that is OURWC as in community, F as in foundation.org. That's our website. You can sign up and get tickets for our fundraiser there. You can see more of the programs that we're doing. You can donate to those programs, or just in general, you can donate to our general fund, which allows us to, as I kind of alluded before, our needs ebb and flow over our pillars throughout the year. So that just gives us a little more flexibility. So, and if you want more personal connection, you can go and just on our email, there's a note there, info@ourwcf.org. And we're happy to have a personal conversation about how maybe your heart and your passion and your focus can be connected in with Wasatch Community Foundation and the work we do.
Yeah. Anything else you want to mention, Jackie?
I think this has been an awesome opportunity. I'm so grateful for a few minutes to share a little bit about what we do. And I'm excited to see some new people come and participate and be part of our team.
Yeah, well, appreciate you calling in. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks so much, Parker.
Thanks. On the phone with me now, I've got UDOT Region 2 spokesperson, Kyler Sharp. How's it going this morning, Kyler?
Good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. UDOT, Utah Department of Transportation, kind of rounding out its construction season. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
Is it normally just generally, is it the cold temperatures for you all, or is it the snow, or kind of that fiery mix of both?
So there are some projects that we can do some work during the winter, but yeah, typically the cold temperatures is kind of what stalls production on some projects, right? Because we have to use concrete or asphalt, and sometimes that's not always the best time to lay that down.
Yeah, surely. Wanted to hit on, you know, the variety of projects going on in Summit County. I think the big one that most people are aware of is work on that interchange between I-80 near Kimball Junction and the US 40 flyover. So where can you tell us on where we're at on that?
Yeah, so just a quick background. We have four projects kind of going on in that area around Interstate 80 and Kimball Junction. Then we have the westbound US 40 to westbound Interstate 80 flyover ramp. Then we have one going eastbound and westbound US 40. And then the SR-248 interchange. And typically what we're trying to do with these projects is just trying to improve drainage, ride quality, reduce congestion, and just kind of preserve the underlying infrastructure of asphalt and concrete on the roadways, right? So just basically just trying to extend the lifespan. So good news. It looks like the westbound US 40 flyover to westbound I-80 project, that should be opening Saturday evening, October 5th. And then the Kimball Junction around exit 145, so the eastbound off-ramp at Kimball Junction, that one will open both lanes as early as Sunday, October 6th. So on that one, they're just placing striping and then rumble strips. So,
well, I know that's some exciting news for locals. Is that a phased project? Will you guys have to come back at all, or is that good to go now?
Typically with our projects is sometimes you get those ones where it is what we're done right now, or we basically finish up like 80 to 90% of the work, and then next year we might have to come in and do some cleanup work. But with those cleanup work, it typically is night work, and it has little to no impacts.
Yeah. I did want to touch on, I understand UDOT, I believe, received some federal grants for this project, but the wildlife project going up around Echo, can you kind of tell us about what the plans are there and then what construction could look like?
So that one, I don't know too much about. I know we do have a wildlife project up there in Echo, and I have worked with the project manager a little bit. But to my understanding is that we're placing some wildlife fencing up there just to kind of help with wildlife mitigation. But as far as getting more into the nitty-gritty of the details, I can get that for you after this interview if you'd like.
Yeah, and I did understand the UDOT underwent some paving projects in the Camas Francis area this summer as well.
Yeah, so all in Summit County, I mean, it seems like we always have something going on. It seems like the last 2 to 3 years. But basically what we're trying to do is we're just trying to repave some of the spots that are kind of a little bit of a rough ride. I mean, of course, we want to extend the lifespan of the roadway, but also some of these pavement jobs are just to get us into a bigger project in 2025. So, if you think about the pothole, in Park City, right? So we actually had crews out yesterday, and they actually had a paver out there. They rotor milled all of it, and they paved over the top of it. And that is a temporary fix to get us into a bigger project that's going to happen in 2025. And I believe that is going to go from US 40 to Hyatt Ranch, but I'm not entirely sure on all of the details.
Yeah. And did I hit on the list of all the current projects in Summit County? Was I missing any?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you nailed them all. It's the Summit County projects, like I said, there's four of them there, and they're all kind of grouped into one. So just four different locations.
Yeah. Is there any sneak preview you can provide regarding any future projects potentially next summer?
No, just kind of the one I mentioned is the paving job from US 40 to Hyatt Ranch. I believe that one's coming, but I can get more detailed on that.
Yeah, and, you know, just turning the page, winter's coming up. Obviously, becomes a busier travel time up here, but also a little more dangerous. Just wondering what resources UDOT provides that, you know, could help out drivers.
Yeah, you know, we always have our traffic app, right? So we always want drivers to use our traffic app. If you're trying to plan a trip up Summit County, right, make sure you get to where you want to go in time and also safely. So that's a good resource. We also have the Summit County dashboard that's available. That'll kind of tell you a delay as far as if there's any congestion in a canyon or just in Summit County in general. But yeah, we always kind of refer to the traffic app, and we want people to use that as much as possible.
Yeah. Kyler, anything else you think residents should know?
I just want to say thank you, and we appreciate you guys' patience. We understand that Summit County's been kind of hit hard the last 2 to 3 years with whether it's big projects or smaller projects. It just seems like we always have something going on, and we just want to say thank you for the patience. And the work will get done. It is necessary that we do it because we do want to make sure that drivers get to where they're going safely and they have a smooth ride while they do it.
Yeah. Well, appreciate you calling in with an update. Have a good weekend.
Yep. Thank you. You as well.
A Heber City woman is facing charges for alleged child abuse of an 11-month-old boy. KPCW's Christine Weller reports the child went to the hospital with severe head trauma.
26-year-old Eliorith Jimenez Marin was charged with felony aggravated child abuse and booked into the Wasatch County Jail Tuesday. The Wasatch County Sheriff's Office received a call from the Utah Division of Child and Family Services September 27th about the alleged abuse. Court documents state the 11-month-old boy needed emergency surgery for a brain bleed. According to deputies, the boy's mother dropped him off at the Jimenez Marin's home in Heber at 8:30 a.m. Around 2:30 p.m., the mother said Jimenez Marin called her saying the boy was, quote, not doing well and not waking up, and she took the 11-month-old to the hospital. The next day, a primary children's hospital doctor told the Wasatch County Sheriff's Office the child was, quote, not doing well, that he had non-accidental severe trauma to his head consistent with shaken baby syndrome. The doctor said part of the baby's skull had to be removed during surgery. Deputies interviewed Jimenez Marin on October 1st, and she told them she was babysitting three other young children while watching the 11-month-old boy. Around 2 p.m., Jimenez Marin said she changed the 11-month-old's diaper and then left the room to throw it away and use the restroom. When she returned, Jimenez Marin said she saw the baby, quote, lying at the bottom of the stairs. According to the affidavit, she said the child was unresponsive. Jimenez Marin said she then shook the child back and forth to get him to wake up, but he remained unresponsive. Jimenez Marin has been charged with aggravated child abuse, a second-degree felony with a penalty of up to 15 years in prison and a fine of up to $10,000. She's due in court for a preliminary hearing October 9th. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
And we now know more about the people killed in a head-on crash on U.S. 40 Tuesday afternoon. The Utah Highway Patrol said 35-year-old Norma A. Jones of Duchesne was driving a Volkswagen sedan when it crossed the center line and hit a Dodge Ram truck near Daniel Summit, about 17 miles southeast of Heber. Her 3-year-old daughter, who was also killed in the Volkswagen, has not been identified by name. She was also from Duchesne. Jones's two sons were also in the car. Both children were flown to the hospital with serious but non-life-threatening injuries. None of the four people in the Volkswagen were wearing seatbelts. The two men in the truck were hospitalized with non-life-threatening injuries. And the Kimball Junction Library is hosting its second Human Library event Saturday. KPCW's Connor Thomas has details.
The Human Library at Summit County's Kimball Junction branch features living, breathing books, explains librarian Dan Compton.
And that's where we have the opportunity for our library patrons to sit down and have a one-on-one conversation with a human book.
Librarians jokingly call it checking out a person who makes themselves available so others can learn about their lived experience. They keep the titles a secret until the day of the event.
They always are people who have experienced prejudice in some form. So just a couple of examples were a refugee, a recovering alcoholic, sexual abuse survivor, someone who is blind. and people were able to come and have a conversation one-on-one in a safe space and ask any questions they would like and hopefully walk away from that with better understanding.
Friends of Summit County Library sponsors the free event. Readers can drop by from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. October 5th. Conversations generally last 20 minutes or less. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
And the Summit County Attorney's Office has filed felony charges against four people accused of voting twice in the June primary election. Court documents released Thursday show in each suspected case, voters were mailed ballots corresponding with their registered party, then requested the other party's ballot and cast both. In Utah, Republican primaries are closed. Only registered Republicans can vote in them. Democratic primaries are open, and anyone can request a ballot. No matter a voter's registration, they can only vote once. It's illegal for voters to cast both ballots. The four Snyderville Basin residents, Brett Allen Reed, his wife Patricia Neumayer, Bruce William Kirchenheiter, and Carolyn Ann Rose, are now facing charges of double voting, a third-degree felony punishable by up to 5 years in prison and a $2,500 fine. According to court documents, Rose told a detective a county clerk employee told her she could not vote twice. However, Rose said she thought the employee was wrong and submitted two ballots anyway. One of the others charged, Bruce Kirchenheiter, told the detective the clerk's office didn't inform him he couldn't vote twice. He also claimed the county's website provided no warning about voting two times. In a statement, Summit County Attorney Margaret Olson said, quote, "If individuals vote twice, we will find out about it and we will prosecute it." Olson noted it's also a felony to apply for a ballot in the name of a dead person, a fictitious person, or in the name of an individual other than oneself. It is also a felony to sign a ballot envelope for another person. Summit County Clerk Eve Furse urges any residents with questions about the election to reach out to her office or the Lieutenant Governor's office, which manages elections statewide. Olson says she hopes the charges filed Thursday will deter others from illegally voting in elections. Oakley will soon be the only Eastern Summit County town managing its own network of unpaved multi-use trails. So it's the first to try to balance horses, pedestrians, bikes, and in particular, e-bikes. Connor Thomas reports on that.
Oakley city leaders are concerned about speeding and wear and tear on trails from e-bikes, so they're preparing an ordinance that Councilmember Tom Smart says will put people on notice that their e-bike may not be allowed on single track in city limits. It would also establish speed limits for paved trails.
When you have somebody who is speeding, who's doing it, and you have an incident where they're going around a corner and irresponsibly and cause a horse wreck or something like that, You're criminally and civilly liable.
There hasn't been a serious crash yet. The city wants to keep it that way as it approaches the completion of a trail network connecting Peoa to Oakley to the wider South Summit Trails Foundation system in the Uintas. It's called the Weber River Pathway. The Oakley City Council revised its ordinance for the second time at its September 25th meeting, but it hasn't officially adopted it. It'll go through at least one more revision. The latest version is somewhat narrower than the last, which notably classified any out-of-class e-bike as a motor vehicle. The second version of the ordinance is closer to what state law says. If it's not a Class 1, 2, or 3 e-bike, it's, quote, not an e-bike. Are they motor vehicles, though? These out-of-class e-bikes still wouldn't have VINs registered with the State Department of Motor Vehicles, but here's what the ordinance says a motor vehicle is. Quote, any motorized bike or wheeled vehicle, including electric and gas motorcycles, single-wheeled devices, scooters, or the like, that is not an e-bike. The latest version of the ordinance now also makes exceptions for older riders and those with mobility disabilities, similar to exceptions in Park City and the Snyderville Basin. Also similar to recent restrictions adopted on the west side, Oakley is planning speed limits for both single track and paved trails, 10 miles an hour and 15 respectively. The ordinance will come back for a third reading at a future council meeting. It cannot be adopted then until after a public hearing. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
In studio with me now, I've got Jeff Whiteley with the Excellence Concert Series. I've also got David Park here in the studio. How's it going this morning, Jeff?
It's an honor to be here. Wonderful day, beautiful city.
Yeah, beautiful day. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Yeah, I just wanted to start with, tell me about the Excellence Concert Series. It seems like you guys put on a lot of free events around the state.
We say we're in the joy business.
Yeah.
We're putting on community concerts offered at no charge. Everyone is welcome. Very inclusive that way, different styles of music. Last year we did 114 concerts in 25 different Utah communities. Last month we started working with the Park City Institute. Again, a privilege and an honor to work with Amber and Ari and that wonderful organization. And we brought Broadway and Beyond, an act, to the Eccles.
Yeah.
And tomorrow it's David Park, classical violin, piano, and flute. David Park, of course, is a globe-trotting, award-winning violinist, soloist, and it's just a thrill. When we had David Park in Delta, Utah, he played for the school, the 650 school kids in the day, and then an evening concert. The word from my counterpart, who was helping set up the concert in Delta, Utah, her comment was, these kids will never be the same. Mm-hmm. And he just cast a spell. I think I'm talking too much. Let's put David Park on.
Well, we do have David Park in
the
studio.
Just stop talking, please. Hi, Parker, how are you?
I'm great, David, how are you?
Well, this is such a beautiful studio. The best view of all the studios I've interviewed in.
I like to think it's the best.
Yeah, beautiful.
Well, David, what can you tell us about your career and what music you perform?
Well, we don't have that much time, so I'll make it short. But, I've been playing since I was like 10 years old, performing from about 10, started from about 5 or so. But what makes what I do so special is that I get to travel to so many beautiful places around the world, meet so many wonderful people like Jeff. And but the most important is just, when I present music to the public, and then if they're very inspired from my music, because I put a lot of sacrifice into it, for any musician. And then, that's the perk. You come home feeling good, and I'm very satisfied going to bed.
That's always the goal. Yeah. So how did you two get involved in working alongside each other?
I think Jeff has some connection with Utah Symphony.
Okay.
And I used to be one of the concertmasters there. And when I was there, I think we were introduced through that. Was it not, Jeff?
Yes, something and like also that? It was through, in the COVID years, we were doing live streams
that was crucial.
From the Gallivan Center.
Oh, wow.
And we hosted a concert with David Park and pianist Alex Marshall. Yeah. And that was a big success, and that's how we met. That was the first
you know
time.
How during the COVID time, streaming was everything?
Yeah.
And I think especially at that time, the excellence in the community was, played a very vital role because everybody, as you know, was at home, and then we introduced beautiful music to their home, like not just here, but all over the world, actually.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes, the excellence videos went around the world during the COVID era.
And I believe one of the concerts I did with excellence had a million views.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
No, really.
One of his excellence live streams received over a million views.
That's pretty big for a live stream.
Yeah.
And so you'll be performing at the Eccles Center tomorrow, correct?
Yeah. So I don't know if you're aware of this. The Eccles Center, which opened, I think to be exact, 1998, right?
Sounds right.
Yeah. And I was a little kid at the time. But the grand opening, I got to open, I know, nowadays it's kind of shame to say, but Bill Cosby was the guest of honor. This is before, of course, everything that happened.
Of course.
And then, so I believe I was the first one as a musician to perform there. And I opened for him. It was a gala night. I remember people wearing tuxedos.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Do you remember the TV series Love Boat?
I might have been a bit before my time.
One of the actors from Love Boat, who was the MC, I think Robert Ulrich was his name, was an actor.
Okay.
And then, because Sundance being here, there were few actors. It was really exciting.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, that's Bill Cosby. Mr. Cosby, my name is Davis.
And so will it be a bit nostalgic for you going back there tomorrow?
Yeah, so this is my first time returning back.
Wow, okay. So, that's quite
So kind of excited and then just curious to see how it is now, if it's changed at all.
Yeah, and so, you know, what kind of set do you have planned? What should people expect?
So that evening, I play music of Carmen. I think most people know the opera Carmen. So I did a violin version, and I played it that evening. So I will repeat that and play that tomorrow as well. That's, I think, one of the highlights of the program.
Yeah. You know, Jeff, just going back on the concert series, on the background, you know, how long have you been around?
Excellence in the Community began in 2005. Okay. And it was simply an idea. And the idea was Utah has fabulous musicians. Let's harness those accomplishments for the benefit of Utah communities. So we got started, and it's just been a very fulfilling project. I say we're in the joy business, and David echoes that. Musicians love what they do, and when the circumstances are great, as in a beautiful venue like the Eccles Center, mm-hmm. and then when the crowd is there, and then when the musicians are doing their best, that's a lovely evening. It's a lovely contribution to people's lives, to mm-hmm. a community. So, yes, we try to say we're enhancing the quality of life one concert at a time, one community at a time.
Yeah, and for those, you know, not able to make it tomorrow, you guys do a lot of events down in the Valley and kind of all around the state, or just kind of the Wasatch Front?
Well, that's interesting. We received a grant from the Utah Division of Arts and Museums to take our concerts to very remote communities. And again, I was talking about David Park's impact on Delta, Utah. It was we drove home together, and it was just an extraordinary experience to see people respond to something they normally don't get. Mm-hmm. Classical music in Delta, Utah, just a fabulous event.
Yeah.
And I just got back from Milford, Utah, and we had the country artist Charlie Jenkins, and again, to see his impact on those kids. We do school concerts in the day and then evening concerts for the community. The first thing I say after the concert is to the town leaders and the principal, let's book another date, we'll come back. And so we're interested not just in single events, but in a series.
Yeah.
In building something, building an audience, building relationships with individuals. But I have to say, I feel like one of the luckiest people alive because of the sense of fulfillment that comes from what we're doing.
Yeah.
So if I may add to that, so this the rural concert we did in Delta a few months ago, so it's very satisfying what I was saying earlier, because when people come, at the time I came straight from France, arrived back here in Utah, and then it was a couple of days later in the concert at Delta, and people knew that. And actually, I think I might have told them. Mm-hmm. And they were so appreciative that somebody who goes around the world comes to Delta.
Yeah.
And when people come backstage with tears in their eyes, and even kids saying how moved they were, you know, I think there's no feelings like that.
Yeah.
You know, that's when I feel like, oh, you know, being mm-hmm. a musician, moments like this really pays off.
Yeah, totally. So, David, you did bring your violin in studio with you today. I was hoping we could get a little sample.
I wasn't expecting, but should I play a few notes?
I think a little sample.
Yeah, give a little preview for tomorrow?
Yeah, I think that'd be lovely.
Okay, sure.
Jeff, could you just speak a little bit more about what, you know, acts you're drawn towards when you're kind of programming?
Yeah, we love musicality. I love lyricism. I love great tone quality. We love all kinds of music, but we like a sense of tone quality. We love singers who have beautiful resonance, a beautiful timbre to their voices. We do a wide variety of concerts. This week, let's see, we had the University of Utah Jazz Professors Wednesday night. We have a barbershop chorus with award-winning barbershop quartets Friday night in West Jordan. We have Saturday night, we have David Park, of course. Next week, we have a rural concert in Where is that? No, we're going to Salina. Daggett County, October 17th. And then Larkinspur performs at the Covey Center, October 19th. And the list just goes on. Different styles of music.
Yeah.
From Celtic to country to Broadway to classical.
Trying to
jazz.
Hit it all.
Yeah.
But I think what makes it so special, they bring music to all areas of Utah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for the community, and then, you know, I think it's sponsored by the county, so it's free concerts for the public. So I think what they're doing, it's really fantastic.
All right, so I guess, David, could you tell us a bit about what you're going to sample, and then you can let it rip?
I wasn't thinking about this, so... So I'm going to play, like, variety of music.
Okay.
But one is... I think one of the most beautiful music by Richard Strauss called Morgen.
Okay.
Morgen means in German tomorrow. So maybe let me see if I still remember.
Let's go for it. Beautiful.
So it's aria. It's actually a song.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, violin is a very vocal instrument. So I think it fits on the violin as well.
Yeah. And so, David, are you from Utah?
No, I grew up, well, originally I was born in South Korea, mm-hmm. Seoul. And I grew up in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I went to different places. And then before Utah, I was in New York. I went to Juilliard School.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was there for a few years, and I was recruited here to play for the symphony, and I also taught at University of Utah as well. And then now, a manager approached me a few years ago, wanted to take me all over the world,
mm-hmm.
So I started a new chapter.
Yeah. So any exciting places you're headed later this year?
Well, actually, in a couple weeks, I'm off to, next week, I'm doing another excellence concert in Salt Lake City.
In Salt Lake City?
Yeah, this time.
Where will that be at?
At Grand Theater.
Grand Theater.
Grand Theater. And then after that, I'm off to London.
Very nice.
It's kind of a unique concert because a Prince of Luxembourg is coming to London, and they asked me to do a special concert for him.
Wow. That'll be a special occasion.
Yeah.
Well, we're about out of time, which we could talk longer, but anything else you two want to mention?
I think excellenceconcerts.org is the website. People can reserve tickets. Not necessary, but it does help, and make sure that everybody gets in who wants to come in. And I think the information is there. Excellenceconcerts.org, tomorrow night, 7:30.
7:30, and if you miss him, you'll be at the Grand Theater later this month.
Next week.
October 12th.
October 12th.
In Salt Lake City.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, appreciate you two coming in and lovely music to kick off a Friday. So, thanks so much for coming
thanks,
in.
Thanks, Parker.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.